You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another ugly loss means we have plenty to talk about here on today's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. And here we are, 128-107. The Suns lose in Washington to the Wizards. Really no other way to slice this. It is an ugly loss, as I said, and an unacceptable one, and we are going to break all of it down right now. If you are new to the show, go ahead and hit that follow or subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to, and if you are here once again, welcome back. We are here every single weekday. Yesterday, a great episode with Brandon Duenas of Zona Hoops and Bright Side of the Sun, and hopefully more guests throughout the week. So do not go anywhere. Every single morning, a new show in your feed. But today, as always, is a recap show of the Suns' fourth loss of the season. 128-107 once again. And just to quickly run through things here, guys, the first quarter was ugly. The first half was ugly. But especially things really got off the rails with about 3.5 minutes or so to go. At this point in the game, Mikal Bridges was out with two fouls, he went out during this stretch, rather. Javon Carter is on the floor for Chris Paul. You know, Paul, that early stagger, he leaves the court with about 6 or so minutes left and comes back with about two. So that's kind of where we were here. 3.5 or so minutes left. Here's the sequence. Booker, at this point, the Wizards are going into sort of a zone slash zone press type of defense. They're pressuring the ball when it's in Booker's hands. They're zoning up to make the Suns beat them. This lineup with Carter on the floor for Paul doesn't have a ton of juice off the bounce in terms of shot creation. Ayton had already made some mistakes, so the Wizards went to this, what Booker would probably call a junk defense, but it worked, and here's what it was. So Booker misses, like I said, that pull-up jumper at the elbow off of a screen. Washington misses. The score at this point, by the way, was 10-13. Booker turns the ball over off of a double team. Washington misses. So back and forth, pretty poor. I mean, like I said, this is, you know, most of the way through the first quarter, and the teams are basically neck and neck at 10. So this was a game, a moment ready for the Suns to take it. Booker, next possession, with 19 seconds on the shot clock, takes a pull-up three in transition, misses it. Then the next time down, Bridges fouls Bradley Beal on a three. Beal makes all three free throws to make it 16-10. Next time down, Cam misses a three. The Suns get the offensive rebound. Booker turns the ball over or creates a jump ball. They get the jump ball. Carter misses a three. And then Mo Wagner makes a layup with Ayton just completely not helping whatsoever on that shot, and Wagner makes it over the top of Cam Johnson, and the score is 18-10. And as overly simple as it might sound to say that the game ended there, Washington basically took control of the first half, went into the second half up, 68-42, got up by as many as 30, 31 or so, and the Suns never took back control of the game. They cut it to, I believe, 23 at one point, maybe less here and there in the second half, but that was pretty much it. The Suns came out hapless. They did not take the game when they had the chance to, and what ended up happening is that Washington's offense was just too hot. The second quarter, Davis Bertans goes off, I believe scores 15 points in just a few minutes of the second quarter. Bradley Beal keeps it going all night. He finishes with a 34-8-9. And Washington, once again, it reminded me a lot of the Black Friday game last season, again against these Wizards. Very similar team with no Russell Westbrook in tonight. It looks a lot like last year's team, and an offensive juggernaut that can catch you off guard if you're not ready. And maybe Westbrook being out helped them a little bit, because those half-court mistakes and bad decisions that Russ can make on occasion didn't really plague the Wizards, and they took care of business completely. They had a 132.1 offensive rating in this game, and whether it was Beal, whether it was Bertans, or just kind of ball movement and three-point shooting overall, the Suns were not really able to defend them. So that is what happened. 128-107 final score. What I really want to get into, guys, more so than breaking down how the game fell, which was really, like I said, that late first quarter streak right there, I want to talk about why the Suns keep losing these games, and whether it's a pattern or a fluke or somewhere in between. But before we get into all of that, I want to tell you about the first sponsor of today's show, which is Bet Online. The divisional round of the NFL playoffs is this weekend. We have NBA every single night, and the NHL is coming back in no time. There's only one place that has you covered for all of that, and only one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. I was looking at the lines here on the NFL divisional round, and I'm not going to lie, they're really good. Those guys know what they're doing. It's tough. I always just try to, you know, if the spread is really big or really small, that's obviously where my eye is going to go first. We have the Bills favored by one. It's almost a pick 'em. That is an interesting one to me, because I think even the Ravens on the road, yes, the Bills are having a lot of fans in that building right now. Yes, they're on a roll, but I feel kind of weird saying that, you know, that game's not going to have some funny business. You could see a Ravens blowout just as easily as you could see a Bills blowout or anything in between. So that one, and then 10.5 or 10 is what I saw for Browns Chiefs. I mean, I think the Chiefs will win that game, but betting on a team to win by 10, even if it is Kansas City, just feels a little tough for me, especially after how well we saw Cleveland come together in that game, and hopefully they get their head coach back and everything. Just a little, you know, smattering of what's going on at BetOnline, so don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Bet on these NFL games. It just makes it more fun, guys. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On while you do it to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Back here, recapping morning, maybe, the Suns 128-107 loss to Washington on the road to cap off a three-game road trip in which they went 1-2, winning the perhaps least winnable at the outset of all of them in Indiana. So what I wanted to go through here is not so much anything sort of small and technical. I do think Detroit and Washington were very different games. I mean, the Wizards kind of beat the Suns from the perimeter, whereas Detroit's advantage in that game was interior scoring and size and rebounding and all of that. So I don't know how much in common they have in terms of like the semantics of the opponent. But what I do think we really have to zero in on here is two things. One, when we talked about, and I talked about it on this show with Brandon, with Nekias Duncan, with almost everyone who's come on over the first few weeks of this season, is like, how legit is this? How real is what the Suns are doing? And what I came away thinking is, as I said on the show, most of what they were doing was pretty legit and replicable, and I figured it would continue. I think, though, that a lot of that hinged on the assumption that Chris Paul and Devin Booker would be themselves before long. And yes, Devin Booker scored 33 points in this game in just 33 minutes, but had no assists and, you know, did, quite frankly, did a ton of his damage late in this game. Monty kept the starters in for most of the second half in their normal rotation outside of Bridges and Ayton. Bridges because of foul trouble, Ayton because he was just not very good. But Booker was in there for a long time. Paul played 36 minutes, so I don't think that's really evident of what they did. More reasonably, we saw a pretty poor first half from this offense overall, and another night in which we just didn't see the Booker and Paul that you would expect. And so what ends up happening here without those guys is the Suns are very dependent on three-point shooting. They just are, you know, and not even just three-point shooting, although it is worth mentioning here that tonight Bridges, Crowder, and Johnson went 2 of 13 from 3. When those guys don't shoot well, the Suns just aren't going to win games. It's just the reality. I mean, a lot of their offense is predicated on those guys getting open shots for those three players on the perimeter, and if they don't make them, it's going to be a long night. But all of that aside, when that doesn't happen, you could see a world in which Paul and Booker, or even if it's just a little bit of a down night for those three shooting, you could see a world in which Paul and Booker's overall shot creation and offense overcomes it. But right now we're 11 games into this season and that we just still haven't seen that. And so what happens is the Suns do get dependent on those shootings. So overall, 4 of 27 from deep tonight, and three-point shots are just highly variable. I mean, I get as sort of tired as anyone of Eddie Johnson sort of picking nits at three-point shooting, but I think even he would admit on this, and has on this broadcast this season, that that's just how the Suns offense is designed. But one thing EJ's always been right about is that it is a shot that's going to lead to some natural ups and downs. It's just the nature of it. It's the hardest shot in basketball. It's predicated on creation more so than some shots, right? You know, you have to do a lot to get an open three. That's not an easy thing to do in the NBA. So it's predicated on getting into the paint and making things happen to the point where you're getting a Bridges, a Johnson, or a Crowder open. So when that's not working, and that's sort of what a lot of your emphasis or the basis of your offense is, then it can lead to some possessions without much purpose, and we've seen that. So all of that sort of is a domino effect from Paul and Booker not being at the level that we expected or that I think this team needs them to be, and you get into nights like this. The other thing, from my perspective, that is, I have one more big one, and then I'll get into some smaller ones. The other big one to me is, and I probably should have mentioned already, but this is another game without campaign. And that might sound like it's not a big deal, but it really is. I mean, even think back to the stretch I just highlighted in that first segment of where this game fell off the rails. And what did you see there? You saw, with Paul out of the game at that 6 minute or so mark of the first quarter, where we normally see Payne come in, Javon Carter had to come in. And Booker and Carter is not a good pairing. It wasn't good last year, and it requires Carter to operate more as a creator, which he just can't do based on his size, his very deliberate and methodical decision making that takes the momentum out of possession sometimes, where the ball's swinging or some advantage is created and Carter doesn't necessarily identify it quickly enough, can't make the pass, can't make the shot that the offense creates. So those guys don't fit well together. That's why Monty goes Payne Booker and Carter Paul during the stagger between Booker and Paul. So it created that in the first place, Payne's absence did, but it also just meant they didn't have campaign. And so that brings me to the point, which is the bench is probably been the best part of this team so far this season. And Devin Booker said it himself. I asked him post game, does it surprise you that you guys have had such a struggle in the starting unit or just opening games in general? And he said himself, I didn't even bring up anything about the bench. He said the bench has won us games this year. He said most of the games we've won, the bench has done it for us. So take it from Booker. Don't take it from me. That's been an advantage for this team. But what happens is, as we saw tonight, yes, Payne not being in there meant that we didn't get to see the bench at full force anyway. But more to the point, relying on the bench as sort of the real start of the game, maybe, or as like what you rely on to win those minutes every time is, we've seen the Suns basically get out to a deficit in the beginning of almost every single game. And now you have a game where Payne's not in. Guys on the bench like Šarić and Cam aren't making shots. Cam Johnson, of course, is who I meant there. And then what? Then the lead just balloons. You can't get in the hole and then expect the bench to save you. That's another thing that I probably should have identified as not replicable. It's replicable to have a great bench. Of course, Cam Payne is a guy I think will play good all year. I think Šarić and Cam Johnson are excellent players, and that eight-man rotation with Carter and Galloway in there as well is I don't see any issue with it overall, but as a top three reason you're winning games in the NBA, it's just not sustainable. It's not something that you can count on, because by the time you get to the bench, a lot has happened, right? I mean, that's just the math of it. And so what we saw happen in this one is that run with about 3.5 minutes left in the first quarter. We also, before any of that, we saw Bridges get into foul trouble. We saw Ayton make several mistakes. We saw threes already not falling and the offense starting to get out of rhythm. We saw some decisions by Devin Booker to rely too heavily on jumpers over getting to the basket. And so the game was already kind of getting out of hand. And by the time they went to that bench, it was stacking up on them in a negative way. And the momentum was on the Wizards' side, and the Wizards were able to continue to play some matchups that were working for them, with Wagner as like a scoring stretch big against DeAndre Ayton, with Bertans pulling Šarić out of the paint even when the Suns went big. All of that stuff, you would think this Wizards team would not really pose so many challenges, but the reality is that it did, and the Suns weren't able to really adjust and get more comfortable, because by that point, things were already kind of ballooning, and they didn't have the bench to fall back on without Payne in there, and the bench wasn't working its normal magic. And on all of that, you get a 26-point halftime deficit and basically a game that's already out of reach. I did think they played with better defensive energy in that third quarter. Booker put up a lot of points overall in the second half, but it just was too late, too little too late by that point. And so what Monty ended up kind of nodding to in his post-game press conference with us on Zoom is there might be some changes awaiting this team. And so I want to get into some of that and maybe what I think could happen, should happen, will happen with regard to, you know, the starting lineup, some different things that they can try, you know, what has worked early in games in the past and what might be coming. But before that, I want to take another quick break to tell you about the second sponsor of today's show, which is rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's basically impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing just the brand and the price point that his warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer, you have internet access, most likely, and rockauto.com is at your fingertips. Chain stores have those different price tiers. They have price that they charge professionals, they have a price that they charge folks like us who just walk up to the counter and want to fix whatever's wrong with our vehicle. So Rock Auto, on the other hand, their prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest price available rather than changing them. And RockAuto.com is for everybody. They don't require a membership login or any sort of, you know, you have to be a mechanic to shop here. And none of that. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, with everything from engine control modules and brake parts to more simple stuff like a tail lamp or a new carpet. Whether it's your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see everything available for your vehicle and then go into the brand specs and trim packages that you need. Best of all, again, prices at Rock Auto are reliably low and the same for everyone. Go to rockauto.com right now and see everything available for your car or truck. And when you make your purchase, write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the car parts you will ever need. RockAuto.com. Okay, closing out the show with maybe some notes of optimism, some potential for improvements here on the part of the Suns after a 128-107 loss to Washington. And what it starts with for me is the starting unit, and it's time to take a look. I mean, we've talked about Jay Crowder and Dario Saric and Cam Johnson. Is there potential for change there? I asked the question to Brandon on Monday of if the Suns, if Cam could be a starting candidate soon. I know other podcasts and fans and everyone's been sort of thinking this. It seems like the most likely switch because Cam has just been so good. He has the chemistry from the bubble. He has improved pretty impressively on defense to the point where you can trust him to at least execute this scheme and be in the right places, even if he's not quite the athletic partner for Ayton that you might want. He's not quite the matchup nightmare or not, I guess the guy who can handle the matchup nightmares like Giannis and LeBron and KD like Crowder can be, but the reality is he's just playing better than Crowder, and he didn't really tonight. Like, you know, minus 25 the Suns were in his minutes, 18 minutes, 1 of 6 from 3, 2 of 7 from the field. This was not Cam Johnson's best night. He missed, I think, his first couple threes right away in the first quarter and just things sort of snowballed. But overall, I think we can all agree that Cam has been more steady and he's looked even better on both ends of the floor than he did last year. So that's probably where I could go. Monty was very pointed. He doesn't make mistakes in terms of what he says. So if he brought up that it was on him to consider something like a lineup change, rotation change, in order for the Suns to be at the best chance, to have the best chance to win every single game, take him for his word. He means that, and he said it very plainly today, and even Devin Booker said, you know, that'll be on the coaches to think about and decide, and we'll adjust according to what they tell us. But even Booker admitted that it's a possibility based on how poorly the starting unit has played. So that's the obvious one, right? That's sort of a given. Those guys are pretty interchangeable. We've seen Cam play more minutes than Jay fairly often. But I think that we should also just consider the possibility of a Dario Saric move here. I don't think that this franchise is at a point where it's really willing to bench DeAndre Ayton. I don't think defensively, their ceiling is at its best with Ayton in the game. He was not good on either end in this game. This was probably one of his worst games of the season. 4 of 10 from the field, no free throw attempts, only 6 rebounds and only 1 block. So not even a matchup that he really should have had so much trouble with. And that's part of what's even more puzzling. He just got really out of rhythm, in a funk early, and wasn't able to adjust. So not a good one, not a good night to maybe analyze Ayton per se, but I don't think it just doesn't seem palatable to me to bench your number one overall pick, even if it's understood that it would just be for a short time. What I think is more possible really is Saric into the starting lineup at the four. That's a look that Monty went to really early in this game, despite the fact that Washington's not necessarily a big team like Indiana or Detroit, where you just see like, okay, well, Saric needs to match up with Blake Griffin or against Miles Turner or something like that. This is a team that had Rui Hachimura at the four, Davis Bertans at the four, not players that you need the size against, but Monty seemed to trust the Saric Ayton look as a fix, and it didn't fix anything. Of course, they continued to lose and get a worse and worse deficit building, but it was interesting that Monty went there so quickly. So that's honestly a possibility in my mind. We saw when Ayton struggled and they needed just some more traditional stability, I guess. I don't even know. Monty seems to default to size when things hit. Last year, that was Ayton and Baines. So I don't think we should rule out that it might be Šarić right there. I don't think that's the move I would do. I don't think that's been the best look for this team. Every time Monty has sort of gone to it as a counter for what another team is doing, it hasn't really done anything special. So I don't necessarily know if that would fix much, but we do know that when things sort of get rough, Monty seems to default to more traditional lineups, and that's the best one available to this team right now. The other thing I wanted to hit on in terms of maybe analyzing and understanding a little bit more of why things aren't working so well when it comes to busting a zone or getting out of a funk and just creating high-level shots is how these two star players affect the game. And this is something I'll admit I didn't really realize necessarily so starkly when I was thinking about how Chris Paul would fit on this team, but he's obviously not making a lot of shots, period, this year. His effective field goal percentage is below 50% after being at 56 last year, so, and mostly around that number or somewhere near there, at least above 50 most of his career. So I'm not going to pick on it too much, but here's the main point is only 15% of Chris Paul's shots so far this season are coming at the rim. He hasn't been above 20% since his second season with the Clippers in 2012. So he just doesn't get to the rim. And you compare that even to somebody, well, the other thing is so far this year, he only gets there that much, and he's only making 53% of his shots there this season after making 77% of those shots last year. So, you know, it's a different way. He's going to have to impact the game as a jump shooter. He hasn't seemed to be comfortable bombing away from three against switches the way that we saw him do for the Thunder and in the bubble last season. But you compare that even to a guy like Ricky Rubio, who last year got to the rim. 29% of his shots came at the rim last year. And obviously, he's no incredible finisher either, but he made 53% of those shots. So he made more than half, and he made a point of getting there. That just changes how a defense has to guard you. It sucks the defense inward. It creates openings for shooters. Now, I'm not saying Chris Paul has any problem creating openings for shooters, but if he's not going to impact the game as a scorer and he's not going to get to the rim, that's just a... it becomes a pretty guardable player as a scorer. Now, he's going to make his impact as a passer. That's going to be there till the guy's 50 years old. He could be like Brady and Breeze are about to be this weekend playing in the playoffs in their mid-40s if he wanted to, Chris Paul, just as a passer. But as a scorer, he's been very, very human this season, and I think that has a big reason, is a big reason for why when they get into these ruts as a team that his scoring is not able to just sort of pick them up and galvanize them and get them back into rhythm, because he can't buy a shot that way. He can't manufacture his own shot like we saw last year or at his peak. The other thing is that Booker is, unfortunately for this team, playing a pretty similar role. Only 20% of his shots so far this season have come at the rim. Only 36%, which is actually up from last year, highest of his career, but still a player who doesn't take a ton of shots from three, especially based on what we know him to be as a shooter. Most of Booker's shots, at least relatively speaking, a plurality, if we're going to use election words, although I don't want to give any of you PTSD, 44% of his shots are from mid-range, and that's been right about where he's been his entire career. But that hasn't changed. We haven't seen Booker get into this role where he's getting more open threes from playing with Paul necessarily, not growing necessarily as a cutter or transition scorer despite the presence of Paul. So he's looked basically the same as he always has, and the rim attempts are down, the transition attempts are down, more ISO, more jumpers overall, and so that's, again, not necessarily the way that a bona fide go-to playoff team leading scorer operates when his team's offense is sputtering. What I wanted to highlight as well with Booker to close things out here is his free throw rate, which is at a three-year low right now. Only one free throw for every three field goal attempts. It was about one free throw for every 2.5 field goal attempts last year. So it's just a less efficient diet from a shot selection standpoint for Booker right now. And so when you combine that with what I just discussed with Paul, it ends up in a situation where you're just hard-pressed to find a bucket when you need one. And so on a night like this, where the Wizards shots are falling, the Suns shots are not falling, you have foul trouble, you have Ayton out of rhythm, you just need Booker or Paul to take the team under their wing and say, no, we're going to make this game close again, if not win it, turn it around and blow this team out like we should have. And that just didn't happen. And it hasn't happened all year. And so whether there's a starting lineup change, whether we see Cam Johnson or Dario Saric join this starting unit, which I think both could help, certainly. They're both better offensive players than Jay Crowder, at least overall. And so maybe that helps. But to get where they want to go and to really be the dominant team that they can be, Paul and Booker are going to need to get to a place as scorers, as shot creators for themselves that they just have not been at all through 11 games. And 11 games is not much, but we're getting to the point in the season where things need to start to click a little bit, and you need to start to show what you are. And so to get to that, what they can be, what they want to be as a team, we need to see Paul and Booker be the players we thought they would be, so that we can say that this stuff is sustainable, so that everything can look more real. But we've been holding our breath that those guys are going to get back to what they've always been, what's made them successful, what's made them all-stars, and they just haven't been that. So until then, it's hard to necessarily know what you're going to get, because you're leaning on the variance of three-point shots, the variance of your bench, the variance of DeAndre Ayton, and that stuff just hasn't proven to be superbly reliable. So another game on Wednesday against Atlanta to figure things out, to balance things out again. Home game, that should help. And another test looming against the Pacers on Saturday, as well as not a shoe-in game against Golden State. So this schedule is relentless. The Suns will get another chance to prove themselves on Wednesday and multiple times the rest of the week. And I will be right here with you for all of it. Check those feeds every single game night for a show just like this one. Have a great Tuesday, and I will be back in your feed tomorrow.